And this is KPCW. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday. It's June 6. 58 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. 58 in the Heber Valley as well. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Leslie, it's beautiful outside. We've got summer feels out there as we've got a ridge of high pressure bringing well above average warmth across the state. Most areas trending about 15 degrees above average by this afternoon. So that puts temperatures back to 83 or so for Park City, a little warmer than yesterday. And we've got plenty of sunshine sticking around throughout the day as well. Light winds expected to be out of the northwest at about 5 miles per hour. So calm across Park City. Heber also looking at hotter temperatures, 90 for the high today. So sunshine sticking around today with high pressure, but there is a little bit of cloud cover that's going to rotate around the ridge into tomorrow. So some increased cloud cover overnight. We should see temperatures drop to about 57 overnight in Park City with a high of 84 again tomorrow, but partly cloudy. Can't rule out an isolated thunderstorm or a stray shower, but for the most part, it looks really great into the weekend. We're going to see a mix of sun and clouds for most days with just a small threat of storms. So you want to keep your eyes to the sky if you're going to be out and about, just in case something pops up as moisture continues to rotate around the ridge. So there's no storm systems that are really going to bring a cold front or anything through. We'll stay in the mid-50s for overnight lows. As we get into the weekend, so for Saturday morning, 56, and on Saturday night into Sunday, also mid-50s. Daytime highs in the low 80s. We'll keep that slight chance of a shower or thunderstorm in the afternoon. As we get into early next week, we'll see temperatures slide to the upper 70s for daytime highs. We'll continue to see partly cloudy conditions on Monday, but more sunshine taking over as we get into Tuesday and for Wednesday. Now, Heber, looking at temperatures in the low 90s for today, tomorrow, upper 80s over the weekend with partly cloudy skies. Could also see a stray shower or storm, mid-80s as we get into early next week with a high of 89 as we get into next Wednesday as well. So not a washout, I think, by any means of the weekends. I think the cloud cover might feel welcome to help keep temperatures from feeling too hot.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
You bet.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up this morning on the Local News Hour, we'll be getting our weekly trails report with Mountain Trails Foundation Executive Director Laura Anthony. Later on, Summit County Council Member Roger Armstrong recapping yesterday's meeting. Park City Ski and Snowboard Program Directors Adam Loomis and Emma Gerard will have details on the Moose on the Loose Kids Trail Series that starts June 8th. And then Habitat for Humanity Executive Director Shelley Barris and Park City Board of Realtors CEO Jamie Johnson discussing how they've combined the overall ball and hats off to housing fundraisers, all of it happening June 15th. Then stay tuned for Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include John Lynn, Associate Director of the Wilkes Center for Climate Center and Policy at the University of Utah. Then a discussion how data is at the heart of an emerging socioeconomic order with economic professors from the University of Rome. That's all happening on Cool Science Radio. And of course, Cool Science Radio heard every Thursday between 9 and 10. And on the phone with us from Mountain Trails Foundation, Trails Director, we got Laura Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie, and happy Thursday, Park City. We've got Wasatch Trails Foundation reporting that everything in the Heber Valley is good to go, even the WOW Trail. Looks like Corey from South Summit Trails Foundation is saying that Slate Creek mountain biking is great and finally good to go. It's all dried up. So if you haven't been out to Slate Creek, I would highly recommend a little trip out to the Uintas. It's not too far up. It's just at the Slate Creek trailhead. You can access some really fun, flowy trail. I think they've got 9 miles out there now. It's definitely worth the haul over there. Looks like Dave from Basin Rec is reporting. Oh my, this is a big one. they have all of their trails cleared of deadfall except for the Mid Mountain Pine Cone. North-facing shadows and ski runs above 8,000 feet are still holding snow, and they are going to be re-benching the east side of Flying Dog for the next few weeks. So be aware, there'll be a machine up there. If you are in the area, just keep your eyes peeled and recognize that the machine operators can't always hear or see what's going on around them. So be very, very careful if you encounter Chris on that machine. There will be crews on, they're saying the Wasatch Trail in the Silver Creek neighborhood doing road-based overlay on the full trail starting today. And then also, as you just mentioned, the Moose on the Loose race will be Saturday from 6 a.m. to 12 p.m. on RTS over in the in the basin turf, and they will be taking over that area for just a couple of hours. The start of the summer color run is at Willow Creek this Saturday from 9 to 11 a.m. There's a 5K and a one-mile loop, and lots of chalky color they're reporting or promising. Registration is still open, so go to the Basin Rec website for that. And finally, Mountain Trails is reporting, let's see what Rick says. He's saying that Mid-Mountain from Marsoc to King Road is still holding snow above the Montage Empire Lodge Zone. Mid-Mountain is good in good shape from King Road to Armstrong. Trails below Montage are mostly good to go with some lingering pockets of snow and blowdowns. We're trying to get to those as quickly as we can. Looks like Mother Urban, Jenny's, Tommy's, Silver Queen, CMG, Seldom Seen, and Skirrow are all good to go. Mojave is still muddy up top. Let's see, Armstrong is still holding snow. Ham might have, looks like we're still holding snow above Ham, but Ham is good to go. And Round Valley, of course, we are still doing the restoration project in that area. Be aware that dump trucks will be coming and going from the Highland Drive trailhead today from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. I was out there the other day, and it's really deep road base. You don't want to try to ride a bike in it. It's just completely stay away from the area. We've got 400 miles of trails. We can definitely find someplace else to be the next couple of weeks while Round Valley is going through its improvements. So that's it for today. Hope to see you guys out there.
Okay, Laura, thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
In the studio now with a recap from yesterday's Summit County Council meeting, I have Council Member Roger Armstrong. Good morning.
Good morning.
This council did not meet last week because of City Tour, the current leadership class 30, of course, along with local elected officials and city and county staff visited the towns of Durango and Telluride. You were part of that tour. Why? I mean, they're pretty remote. Why these two towns?
Well, I think remote is... They're more remote than we are, but we have commonalities in that we've got economies that make it difficult for workforce. Labor is always a challenge. Childcare is a challenge. And it's always, I think, good for us to visit other cities, other towns, other communities that are struggling with the same issues that we are, because we're always looking for the better mousetrap, whether we invent it or steal it. And, you know, we're looking to steal some ideas when they're good ideas, and that's the purpose, I think.
Yeah, you had mentioned at the meeting Colorado City and County collaboration during council comments. What have they partnered to do that you thought was worthy of noting?
You know, I think the challenge for legislators coming from Utah and going into Colorado is Colorado's a home rule state, which means they get to set their own rules, each municipality, within reason. I mean, there's still supremacy of state law over local laws. But as long as the citizens are willing to tax themselves for certain things, then the legislature has a few more tools in the toolbox to try and solve problems. So as we saw in both Durango and in Telluride, Telluride is remarkable. They have sales taxes, they have property taxes, they have others, mill levies that they've increased across the board to buy land, to bank land for building housing later, to build housing. And for the first time ever, I actually saw a commercial property that's deed restricted to be for at a certain economic level that allows occupancy by nonprofits. So they're using, and Telluride is really interesting because about 500 acres were purchased in 2018 or 19 leading into town. You've got wild land and a big waterfall on one end. You've got this open space on the other end. And you've got very steep hillsides that I think are National Forest Service land on either side. So it is landlocked. It's not going anyplace but up, or if they, you know, they can redevelop. And that's what they've done. They've got people, they've got workforce living in some of the most expensive areas of town because they have purchased buildings there. They've got the resources to do that and to build housing that's appropriate for workers that are actually living where they work. And, you know, those kinds of solutions are not available to us now, but it gives us some ideas of where we might be able to go to the legislature to get some wiggle room to try and solve problems.
Yeah. So any understanding on your part why Utah doesn't allow home rule?
I can't begin to guess. I think, I think Utah wants some consistency in fairness with property taxes and sales taxes. They don't want to let it, you know, one community just to blow up everything and tax people unreasonably. So if they keep everybody kind of within the same corridor, they're assured that the taxes are going to be reasonable. I think that's why.
Yeah, and still, I mean, Summit County has some leeway, right, with the transit taxes, with the wrap taxes, with the resort city sales tax here in Park City. So we do have some flexibility.
Yeah, they're all legislatively created. So that's something the legislature passed a bill and said, you can do this, you can do that. And as they do that, we do take advantage of it. Again, the transit taxes may be one of the best examples of what we've done to be able to mount the entire High Valley Transit system as we've done that, and to build some facilities for transit. But that's why we're looking at getting some relief on, and more on that later, on using certain kinds of taxes for EMS, police response, and fire response, because counties don't have the same ability. We don't have access to resort cities tax. So Park City, because they get such an impact from the number of visitors that come, have that ability to raise that sales tax a little bit to take care of those impacts. Counties don't. So we have the canyons, we have the Olympic Park, we have Mirror Lake Highway and everything that goes on there. So we have all of those impacts, but we don't have the same tool to address them.
Council had a discussion with Senator Mike Lee's office before the meeting yesterday. Any particular reason for the meeting? Or?
No, I think they just reached out to say hello and check in and see how we were doing. And we talked a lot about fire mitigation and public lands and how we use them and access to funds to do things like preserve our watershed with some of the open space purchases that we've made. It was a good discussion.
Yeah, and given that the entire county council is made up of Democrats, I mean, are there issues that you and the senator's office even agree on?
I'm going to go ahead and pass on that. We had a good discussion about the things that we had a good discussion about, and we did not touch on some of the issues where we might not have disagreement. I think in that case, where we're looking for support from one of our senators, it's important for us to try and build a relationship to see if we can get that support.
Yeah, so. And that it was just his staff. It wasn't
exactly
he himself.
Yep.
All right, bonding for Skull Candy Building. The council unanimously approved bonds up to $30 million to pay for the purchase and then the renovation. So this starts a clock. Bonds, what, must be issued within 30 days?
Well, we'll have, I think, the public hearing on that, and then that starts a clock. So I think these bonds will be issued, replaced, probably by late July, mid to late July. And that will help us pay for the purchase of the Skull Candy Building and some of the retrofit that we need to do. So it's a $17.5 million purchase price on that building, 45,000 square feet on, I think, 7+ acres, 7.5 acres, something like that. Skull Candy is still in there for some period of time. We have rents coming in from Skull Candy at about $1 million a year. We are having discussions with them about how, you know, what part of the space the county might occupy and what part of the space Skull Candy needs to continue to occupy. And as those discussions continue, that will help us shape, you know, how we take occupancy.
I mean, do you foresee the county kicking out Skull Candy when it needs more room?
I don't think we'll kick them out. They have a lease, so kicking out is not an option right now. But again, we're having discussions with them about use and terms and things like that. So we'll work that out.
So that other $13 million or so, that's specifically then to renovate the building into county offices?
I think the estimate, it could be as high as $12 million for the renovation, but that's not going to be walking in the door as soon as the purchase closes. And so I don't think spending $11 or $12 million immediately, that'll be over time as we phase in our occupancy and how we need to use the building.
All right. And so the idea is that the county buys that, moves its Sheldon Richens functions there, and then what happens with the Sheldon Richens building?
Well, that's part of the discussions right now with Dakota. I mean, I think we've always, not always, the Richens building is not working now. It's overpacked. We've got people sitting in cubbies. We've got people shoved into spaces where it's not sustainable to have our people try to work. So we need to find an alternative. The library is, I think the library functions pretty well, but I think we could have better space for the library and be able to engage with the public better if we move the library. So I think moving the library from Richens to Skull Candy setting up some offices for our employees. I think we probably have some needs in the health department area, but we've got needs in transportation. We have needs in sustainability. We've got a variety of needs right now where people don't have adequate space for the jobs that they're doing. We've got to have room for expansion of staff as well. Right now, we don't have a good plan going forward. And you recall that we were talking about spending upwards of $40 million at the Gilmore property to make that a county campus. This makes more sense. So if we can move those operations out of Gilmore, it opens up an opportunity to, I think in our minds, build a robust transit center. Park City and Summit County have been having conversations for the last several years about where do we park people. If we really want people to get out of cars, where do they leave the cars? Richens turned out, the parking lot for the city turned out to be an interesting alternative this year at a time when they were looking at, you know, the corner of 248 and the frontage road, the Quinn's possible park and ride. This gives us an opportunity to have a very, potentially a very substantial place to capture parking and to put up a robust transit center, multimodal, where we can have buses, we can have the micro, we can have bicycles, active transportation, work with UDOT to get that solution done on finally on 224, to figure out the crossing of 224, how that works, and really build that as a fully functional center. And that's part of the discussions, I think, that are happening with Candace and Chris Robinson right now with Dakota Pacific about the land swaps and what that might mean and how it might work.
I want to get back to that, but you know, I know that both People's Health Clinic and Summit County Health Department could both use more room out of Quinn's Junction. So are we talking about maybe moving the health department to Skullcandy?
We haven't had that discussion yet. I don't know that before we ever made an offer on Skullcandy, we asked the county manager and the deputy county manager to really sit down, talk to staff, look at what our space needs are and where we might put people. I don't think that's not come before council, that final, here's where people need to go. But the options are there. And I think that, you know, with 45,000 square feet of space, it provides us a lot of potential solutions.
There will be a public hearing, as you mentioned, before any bonds are issued. So could you decide not to bond after that public hearing?
Sure.
All right. But you've already voted to purchase. So, I mean, so you've signed a purchase agreement?
We do have a purchase agreement. We are in our due diligence period. So, you know, I guess there's always a way to get out. I don't think we're interested in doing that.
All right. But the bonds do have to be authorized before it closes.
I think we're going to purchase the building.
All right. When it comes to the interest rate, you did authorize a rate up to 6%. What could those bonds realistically be issued for?
I think the number was between 3.9 and 4.6. And the 3.9, one of the things I was concerned about is that the bonds are callable, that, you know, we're borrowing right now at what feels like still a relatively high interest rate compared to where we were, you know, 3-4 years ago, we were borrowing at 2.8, 2.9%. Interest rates are higher. So the ability to call those bonds and refinance if we need to if rates fall, that's what effect, to have a callable bond where we have the right to go in and say, we'd like to pay this off, we want to refinance and get a lower rate someplace, that's going to cost you more interest. So that's the difference between a 3.9 and a 4.6. 3.9, it wouldn't be callable for 10 years. For some of the offerings that we have out there, the placements that we have available to us, it appears that we can get immediate calls or calls at a very short term.
All right. So the bond is what, for 20 years? Is that the plan?
No more than 20 years, yeah.
All right. As you mentioned, Dakota Pacific litigation has been stayed for another 4 months. It was originally stayed for 6 months last December. So does this mean that the talks are progressing well?
It means we're still talking to each other and seeing if we can find a solution here. You know, I think our last, you may recall, our last offer was pretty complicated. It was I would call it a comprehensive offer. I think we've been going back and forth for a while at, you know, 1,100 units, then 727 units, and then the county said 500, and Dakota said 695, and then 600. We were focused on that. We weren't focused on a comprehensive set of solutions that could be beneficial to the community. We were focused primarily on that kind of housing residential number in the mix of affordable that might be in there. When we decided to do this comprehensive solution that involved that land swap, that would give them control of the property where the Richens building is, theoretically, with the assumption that we would build a transit center there and that what they would build adjacent to it might be complementary to that transit center and allow even more ability to absorb more cars and really work well with the transportation issues. Also trying to find solutions with UDOT. When we made that proposal, they sat with it for a while and came back and said, there's a lot here to unpack. It's interesting. We don't quite understand the land swap and what you hope to accomplish there and how that works. And whatever we do, property acquisition, that's something that we do best, not out in the public eye, because it really shapes the discussion. So that's why Chris and Candace right now are involved in those private discussions about what that land swap might look like and what the requirements for that would be. Once that's done, it will come back to the public. We'll be back public facing again and having those discussions about the much broader scope of what they're looking to do.
Okay. As we've reported, Pat Putt, Summit County Community Development Director's last day is August 1st. We heard yesterday that he will be replaced by the second in command at the Planning Department, Peter Barnes. So what can you tell us about Peter?
He's brilliant, he's talented, he's opinionated, he has a big personality, and I think he will be perfect. That said, Pat Putt is my brother from another mother, and he always promised me that he wouldn't leave until I did, and I think, you know, I like to think that my pulling a shift here and deciding to stick around after Melina decided that she needed to leave, he deserves some rest. He's worked his tail off. He started this job at 6 feet 6 inches tall, and he's not that anymore. They have ground him down like a pencil. He is one of our best service providers. He is one of our best public-facing human beings, and I'm going to miss him more than I can tell you, but Peter is going to be a brilliant replacement for him and will be the guy that we want there that will provide the same kind of care on both sides of development issues.
Yeah, so do you see any change there, though? I mean, when we're talking about some of those big developments, Dakota Pacific, Cedar Crest, the Marketplace out at Silver Summit?
I don't know. I think Peter is, I suspect, there would be consistency in leadership there. I'm not worried about that at all. I think Peter will be fine. I think those are big issues, and every one of those projects are going to require a lot of care and attention, and Peter is collaborative. He comes with tremendous knowledge, and he loves to share that knowledge with us, and he's a good partner for us to work with.
Okay, I wanted to hit the Eastern Summit County annexation agenda items. You skipped the annexation in Hennifer, just not ready, or?
We skipped the annexation in Hennifer. I think we said okay to that.
Okay.
I think both annexations were fine. The issue before us is once a petition is filed, we have a certain amount of time to protest it and say don't do that. So I think that's where we are.
Okay, and then the Francis City Burton Ranch annexation, you went ahead and approved that?
Yeah, we just, again, no protest against it.
Okay. The county employment retirement issue, a state bill from some 10 years ago going into effect, it changes how county employees' retirement benefits work. The upshot is that, some employees now will be required to pay back some of their salary to the state?
No. The issue is the state sets up the retirement system. The county has an amount that it has to pay into the system on behalf of the employee. That's capped at 10%. Anything above 10% that gets contributed is the employee's contribution. On the public safety side, the county is allowed to pay that employee side if it chooses to do that. Some counties do, some don't. We choose to pay that. On the non-public safety side, the county is not allowed to pay any amount on behalf of the employee above 10%. So because they raised the amount by, I think, 0.7% that non-public safety employees have to provide on their own. The individual has to pay into the system. The HR department came to us and said that they're recommending that the county, we can't pay that amount for them, but we can increase their salaries by a grossed up amount so that it covers that 0.7%. So it comes out to 0.9 something percent of a salary increase for those public employees to pay into the system, tier two public employees. So it's a subset of our workforce.
So it's not a choice for them to pay. They are paying. It just comes out of their paycheck, but
yeah, they must,
basically paid for.
They must do it, but yeah, it's getting covered in a roundabout way.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Let's see. You covered Pat Putt. I don't think so. I think you're better than me today. It's good.
Okay.
That's it. Thanks, Leslie.
Thanks, Roger.
Talk to you soon.
That's Summit County Councilmember Roger Armstrong. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, this summer, the Park City Ski and Snowboard putting on a new on a kids' trail series. It's called Moose on the Loose. In the studio with details, I have a couple of the program directors for Park City Ski and Snowboard, Adam Lewis and Emma Gerard. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Adam, you want to start? Just tell us what this is all about.
Yeah, so it's new to us, but it's not new to the community, as many of our listeners are aware. This year, we are putting on the Moose on the Loose Trail Series, which has a great history as kind of the one of the bigger and most fun kids trail running races for kids ages 3 to 14. And we're super excited. It fits well with our mission and our community values.
Yeah, who was doing it before him? Because it's been going on since like 2017, I read.
Yeah, Leslie Keener was putting it on just to give back to the community and introduce kids to running. And she is also involved with our club as a parent and thought it was a great opportunity to have us kind of take a bigger role in running the event and have it be a fundraiser for Park City Ski and Snowboard.
Okay. I mean, ages 3 to 14, how far can 3-year-olds run?
The 3-year-olds do around about half a mile. And then the 14-year-olds will do a 5K, and then there's also a 3K. And there's, you know, there's age recommendations for each race, but, you know, kids are welcome to kind of choose what's appropriate, or parents choose what's appropriate for their kids.
So. Sure. Okay. So all of the races are on dirt?
Primarily, yep. They'll be all at trailheads. So we're kicking it off this Saturday. At the bottom of the RTS trail system near the Skull Candy lot. We're actually having participants will be able to park there and walk over from there.
Okay, so the cost to register is how much?
It's $25.
A race, or can you buy a bundle?
Yeah, if you buy, we have 4 in the series, the last one's September 14th, and if you buy all of them, you get a discount.
Yep, so it's $80 for the full series.
Okay. And then the race times are what?
So we started, we started at 9 with the 5K, and then 5 minutes later we start the 3K, and then at 9:10 we start the half mile race. So everything, most of the running is done by about 10 at the very latest 10:30.
Okay. Now, do the races get progressively more difficult, or they're all pretty much kind of on even terrain, or?
The finale at Utah Olympic Park will definitely be the most technical trail because we're on a hillside there, and but the others are fairly similar. I think the longer distance races get on a little bit more single track versus the half mile. Tomorrow will be mostly on a wider trail and part of the bike path. So.
Okay. Yeah. So again, we mentioned Saturday, June 8th, another one July 13th. August 10th, and then the final one, September 14th.
Yep.
Anything else people need to know about that?
I think we already are seeing great participants. We're going to have over 100 kids, well over 100 kids showing up Saturday, which we're super excited about. Obviously we've got a lot of returning participants, but also some new people. So we encourage families to try it out for the first time. It's a really fun, inclusive atmosphere.
Yeah, and I will say, if anyone still wants to sign up, please sign up by Friday. You can find the registration on mooseontheloose.run.
Correct.
Or on our website, parkcityss.org. But getting those registrations in by Friday helps us out a lot.
Okay. Let's see. It sounds like you've got a lot of summer training happening. I know, Emma, you work with kind of the cross-country skiers. You also with the ski-mo and ski jumping. So,
yep.
Adam, what kind of training do you have going on with your athletes?
So we're just getting going in terms of getting back on the ski jumps next week. Our kids have been doing training in the gym and some dry land training. So now that school is coming to a close, we'll be full on with summer ski jumping on all our hills, from our 10-meter learner jump up to our 120-meter. So normal practices in addition to that, we have a couple camps. We do have one with registration open until noon on Friday. So if people are still looking for something to do, we have a camp called the Ski Jumping and Beyond Camp. That's a full day, Monday through Thursday, June 17th through 20th. Again, that information is on our website. Another camp we have is the Junior Jumper Camp, which is an opportunity for newer jumpers, skiers, or kids with no experience or maybe a little experience from get out and play type activities to do half day, Monday through Friday, and that's August 5th through 9th. Again, that's on the ski jumping page of parkcityss.org.
Okay, so you guys are jumping on the plastic then, huh?
Yep, we will be. We haven't got on yet, but we'll take our first jumps on Monday.
All right. And then, Emma, what have you got going on with your athletes?
Yeah, our summer programs start on Monday also for our Devo athletes, which is primarily kids going into middle school, some fifth graders. And they have some summer endurance training. It's very multi-sport oriented, but we also take them out on roller skis and do the activities at UOP and things like that. So we're really excited about that. There's lots of flexibility if people want to do, you know, 4 days a week all summer, or they can just pay per week or per day during the summer. And then our comp athletes, our high school athletes, they're starting off this summer by taking a camping trip to Bryce, where they'll be roller skiing with the Red Rock in the background and trail running and things like that, and team bonding. So yeah, we're looking forward to summer.
Yeah. And then in terms of the winter registration, when does that kind of go online? Later this fall or?
Yeah, usually in July. We don't have a date set, but I would expect that to be coming fairly soon, so definitely stay tuned on that.
Okay, and then I know one of the more popular events of the year is that 4th of July 5K
yep.
fun run that you've got registration open already for that as well.
Yep, exactly. Registration is open again on our website. That is on the 4th of July, kicking off the festivities from Colesport Park Avenue. We'll have, you know, start kind of vendor village from there, and it runs along over towards Silver Star there. Super fun event, again, with some history and always great attendance.
Okay, and I noticed in capital letters there, no day of registration this year. Just
yeah,
gets too hectic.
That one's a little big for, for any event, we encourage signing up early.
Okay, anything else you guys want to mention?
Well, we got a lot going on besides even what we've touched on. That Park City offers at the Olympic Park and around town. There's opportunities to get on the water ramps. A really popular camp is called Air Camp that the Freestyle Division offers, but again, it's multi-sport oriented. They even try some of the Nordic ski jumping, so I get to see those kids there, as well as into the pool, tramps, activities. We also have skateboarding and mountain biking camps and clinics. So it's, you know, we've really taken the multi-sport year-round approach.
Okay.
And the other thing I did want to talk about a little bit is big event we've got coming out. More details will definitely be coming, but we have our annual Springer Tourney, which is a large gathering of ski jumping Nordic combined athletes from around North America. It's July 15th through 20th. And on the 20th, we're wrapping up the week with a big event. In the evening on the large hill, so the 120 Olympic jump, where we'll have all the athletes that are jumping on that hill up to Olympic level athletes compete in kind of a non-traditional target event. It's super fun. It challenges them to try to go for different distances rather than just the farthest distance. We're also going to have a video showing of it on a big screen, some music, really turning it into a big event. So just stay tuned for that. We'll have more information coming out on social media and on our website.
All right. So how do you mark that target on the landing?
So what we did this for the first time last year, and we actually have a big spin wheel. the athletes spin the wheel, and whatever distance, whatever it lands on, that's the distance that they got to jump. So last year we had one of the athletes that went 65 meters one jump, was within a meter or two of his target, and then next jump went, I think, 128, doubled his distance basically with a 130-meter goal. So you'll see some cool variety.
Okay, so you have the judges then on the side looking at the sidelines as opposed to actual moving target on the hill.
Yeah, so the...
Got it.
Exactly, and then it's distance only. The athletes just need to land as close to the target as they can, and then they're in the running.
Style doesn't count.
Style doesn't matter as long as you land.
Okay, all right. ParkCitySS.org for more information.
Exactly.
All right. Thanks, Adam and Emma.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
Well, a property owner in Empire Pass is challenging the Park City Planning Commission's approval of a new chairlift at Deer Valley Resort. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
Last month, the Planning Commission approved Deer Valley's plan to build a new six-pack bubble lift on Park Peak. The lift is one of nine the ski resort is planning to build by winter 2025-26 as part of its major terrain expansion into Wasatch County. This week, the Bransford Land Company, which previously voiced opposition to the project during public meetings, filed an appeal of the lift approval. The Bransford family owns land that Deer Valley leases for the Trump and Ontario runs. The Park Peak lift project also involves grading more than 4 miles of new ski trails, one of which runs directly along the Bransford property line. In a letter submitted to the Planning Commission in April, company chairman Ann Bransford criticized the lift's alignment and wrote that the proposed primary beginner trail is too narrow. She suggested Deer Valley use Bransford land to widen the run. In a subsequent meeting, Deer Valley Vice President and CEO Todd Bennett suggested the resort didn't want to work with Bransford due to active litigation. The Bransford Land Company is being sued by Mayflower LLC over right-of-way access. During the May 22nd Planning Commission meeting, when the Deer Valley lift was approved, Ann Bransford claimed the land in question was not part of the lawsuit. Mayflower LLC is a subsidiary of Extel Development, which is constructing the new Deer Valley East Village base along US 40 in Wasatch County. Bransford also said she approached Park City Mayor Nan Worrell last year with an offer to donate the 18 acres to the city as part of a conservation easement. Park City spokesperson Clayton Scrivener confirmed an informal proposal was suggested to the city, but those talks never progressed. He said the offer was never denied. According to the staff report for the May meeting, the 2023 approval of a rezone on the Bransford property established a ban on development outside of two single-family homes. The report says aligning a ski lift over the land would violate that ordinance. The Bransford appeal of the new lift will now head to Park City's three-member appeal panel, which is charged with determining if the Planning Commission acted appropriately in its approval. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, two fundraisers dedicated to building more affordable housing in the Wasatch Back have combined into one. In the studio with details, I have the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity of Summit Wasatch Counties, Shelley Barris, along with the CEO of the Park City Board of Realtors, Jamie Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So how did the idea come to combine the overall ball and the hats off to community housing? Jamie?
Yes. So the Park City Board of Realtors about 4 years ago started getting involved again in the conversations in our community about affordable housing and the issues that we have, and looking for ways that we as realtors could join in those efforts. And so we started out with saying, what do realtors do well in the community? And they like to throw parties and have fun. So we started with our Hats Off to Housing event 3 years ago. And the first 2 years of that, we started with supporting Mountainlands Community Housing Trust and the HOPA project. And so all of the proceeds that we received from both of those first 2 year events, we worked with HOPA and were able to write them significant checks from the events to be able to help with them moving forward with that project. And so this year, our committee, our group got together and said, we would love to continue this effort and to help another organization. And so I went to Shelley and I said, we'd love to support Habitat. And instead of us both throwing two parties or two fundraising events, why not combine efforts and work together? So we are helping them this year with the overall ball. And so it's a hats off to housing, but also the overall ball together.
All right. So that's at least for this year, maybe a second year as well, or?
Potentially. We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
Okay. So you think you're going to be able to raise then the sort of money that they did individually?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's our goal between both of us, is to combine those resources and not be spending double the money on holding an event, but bring all of those people together to help us just raise more money and really bring us together to talk about affordable housing while we celebrate.
Great. All right. Yeah, there are a lot of expenses saved just with one venue, one party. Yeah.
Right.
Got it.
Absolutely. And then we are able to bring the vendors and the community leaders that we have had be a part of our event to their event and make them aware of what's going on and what they have to offer through Habitat for Humanity, as well as our silent auction and live auction items that we've always had at our event, to be able to combine and have it all in one place. So we're hoping that we will continue to raise the same amount of money.
Okay.
If not more.
Yeah. So what are the details? When, where, how much?
So Saturday, June 15th. So we're just a little over a week away. So there are still tickets available. We are doing something different and combining our group this year by having two different kinds of tickets. So you can have the dinner full event ticket for $250 a person, or you can join us for just our cocktail hour silent auction portion of the evening for $150, so we can expand how many people can join us this year.
Oh. Yeah. So, and it's interesting because I've had people in the past who maybe don't like to sit through the dinner and hear the whole program, but they love to come for the cocktail hour and the silent auction and give their money in that way. So we decided that this might be a benefit to some individuals who don't want to be there from 5 to 9. They can come from 5 to 7 just for the silent auction and the cocktail hours. And then if they choose to stay for the dinner, it's just a little bit more.
Okay. And it's going to be held where?
So it's at Legacy Lodge, and Vail Epic Promise is our sponsor again this year, which is really great. We have gotten, I want to say, there are some really fun packages combining our efforts and coming up with things that people can get at the events, getting very exciting for both of us. We're looking at how great that is to combine our contacts in the community. It, as you know, is always kind of been the best dress-down event in town. You don't have to wear a suit or put on a fancy ball gown. You can come as you are. You know, our theme is overalls, and from Habitat side, we lean into that. But now we're combining this year the hats off to housing kind of piece of it as well.
Okay, well, let's hear about some of the auction items that you have.
Yeah, we have some really fun trips that will be in our live auction. So we have a vacation in Mexico, and I am so terrible, I'm not sure exactly where it's at, but we had it last year and it is an amazing value. We have a Palm Springs house. We have a lot of events and activities in the community that are really fun. Alpine Distilling gin class, which is always a really popular thing, and I'm hoping I get to be a part of that because it sounds really fun.
Okay. And then for those that are just part of the cocktail hours, the live auction will happen just for those who stay for dinner?
Correct.
Is that how it's going to work?
Correct.
Okay. Are you going to do the silent auction online?
It is online as well, and it should be going live here hopefully by the first of the week, so people can start seeing what is out there. And you, even if you can't come, you can still participate.
Okay. Let's see. Shelley, maybe give us an update then on the affordable units that you've been busy building there in Silver Creek Village.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are just in the mortgage process with our last six homeowners to get them in their homes and going through that process with them. We're really excited. While we're in the building and planning kind of process on the next 10 townhomes, and we are working in some partnerships that are not solidified yet, but for maybe another 13 homes that we'll hope to be working on right after that.
Okay, so would that be the end event?
So that the 10 units will be starting this summer, are the last of our homes in Silver Creek Village, and then we're looking at some partnerships in Wasatch back and talking to some people about some other homes.
Okay, not necessarily in Silver Creek Village.
So. Yes.
And then, so what was the total number of units there at Silver Creek Village?
We did 26. We have 26 total homes.
Wow. So again, you're about halfway,
yeah,
halfway through those.
Yeah.
We've heard a lot of this about the problem with affordable units and homeowner association fees. How are we making that work?
Right. We're having a lot more conversations about it as we see a project like this, and you've known many other projects in Park City. We've seen those issues and those struggles. So we're starting to have a lot of conversations with the county, with the cities, right, with municipalities about it, just to educate them about that, and then maybe talk about how could we work with developers or within our own projects to minimize that, maybe for the affordable units, because it is worrisome, right? It's expensive even at the time of move-in, but what happens, you know, down the road, and it's not really controllable. So how do you make sure that stays affordable for the homeowners you're putting in?
Yeah, and certainly those fees go to pay a lot for landscaping, snow removal, new roof, painting,
right?
Just to make sure that the units stay nice, right?
Sure.
For the foreseeable future. I mean, where can you cut back on that?
I think that where we have some opportunity is in the amenities, the additional amenities in a project, and how do we just make sure, you know, that we're finding a good balance of what those are, because in affordability, you know, maybe some of the bigger amenities that are outside of just maintenance of, you know, of the home could be discussed.
Yeah. And is it fair, though, to kind of put some of that burden on those that have market rate units? Yeah. I mean, that's tough, you know, to have their prices go up as well for a fee,
right?
a monthly fee.
Right. It's hard. And I don't have the answers and the solutions. I just know that we all see it's an issue, and how do we start having some conversation and look at innovation around it?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we didn't really think about that as we kind of got into building affordable housing, huh?
Right, I think it, especially in Habitat's world, we have been a single home builder historically across the country, really, and trying to get density and trying to be more involved in multi-use kind of projects, we're really running up against this.
Okay. All right. Hey, Jamie, any idea where that HOPA project stands at this point? You guys have
been moment, I don't. I believe they are still in application process for some funding. So I think they cannot move forward until they get that. So yeah. Shelley may have more insight. I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the details, but I do know that funding is very competitive, right? So I know that it's my understanding they're in that process, and perhaps more than once, right, to try to get it funded.
Okay. For those who may be interested in securing one of those last 10 townhomes at Silver Creek Village, what's the process?
Yeah, so we haven't opened up that application process quite yet. We try to kind of get in the ground a little bit and do it at the beginning and work with our homeowners, but we do, we're doing a couple things to get it out in the community, and so thank you for asking, and we want to share that here. We're partnering with Mountlands and with the Housing Resource Center in Park City, and we're doing some housing how-tos out in the community that are, you know, just open to the public. It's a great way to come and learn about all the affordable housing in Summit County and to be able to, you know, kind of get going and up to speed and know what to do. But we expect maybe by end of summer to do an application round for those next 10 homes.
Okay, and I know that you offer free financial courses for people who are serious about purchasing a home, and some of that is try to improve your credit, get
right.
any loans paid off, and any other advice?
Yeah, I think it's really good. I think any kind of financial preparedness, I mean, home ownership does not happen overnight, so you've got to be prepared, and we see many people apply multiple times to us before they actually are in the position to move forward in the program, and I think financial education can be really helpful. And if our classes don't work for people, we have lots of referrals for people in the community to find what works for them and make sure you're getting those ducks in a row.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah, I was just gonna point out some of our sponsors just to say thank you to them for their commitment. Obviously, Park City Municipal is a sponsor this year, as they have been with us in the past. The Chamber of Commerce, we're so grateful for their participation each year. Park City Board of Realtors and MLS, both companies. The Eccles Foundation, Canyons Village, American First Credit Union, Marcella Club. We have Deer Valley, the Home Builders Association, Larry H. Miller Group, some just amazing contributors to our community that we are so grateful for their support and understanding the value of this opportunity and event in our community. So thank you.
Okay, keep us abreast of those possible 13 that you've got coming online as well.
And you can also still get tickets at habitat-utah.org. Yes, thank you.
Okay, Shelley Barris, Jamie Johnson, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie.